This episode of Current Geek is brought to you in part by Squarespace.com. At Squarespace.com, get a fantastic website, blog, portfolio, online store, and more. For 10% off your account, use the code CURRENT at checkout at Squarespace.com.
I have
Current Geek!
Current Geek!
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Current Geek. This is Current Geek, the weekly proceedings of the meetings of the Frog Pants All-Stars. Geeks of the world and you to keep you current on all things that matter most. I'm Scott Johnson. That is Tom Merritt. Hello, Tom.
I am Tom Merritt, Scott, and I don't... Oh, you didn't say otherwise.
So, okay, fine. Good. Fine. Well, can't refute that, I'll tell you what.
Once again, I can't argue with you.
No. Here we are. We're doing this thing we do. It's a little weird today because we're down a guest. We usually have two.
Man down.
One of them is asleep. Somebody go kick down Brecky's door.
We actually don't even know if he's asleep.
Well, we don't know.
Poor Brecky Thomason agreed to stay up extraordinarily late in his part of the world to be on the show. Yeah. He also stayed up late to do Daily Tech News Show earlier this week, and he stayed up late to have you and Brian Ibbett on his movie podcast earlier this
week. Yeah, I think that's probably enough to make a guy sleep.
Too much of him.
I agree. He has, and he bit off more than he can chew, really, if you want to get right down to the nuts and bolts of this. But that's okay, because we have another guest with us. We have the returning, the very talented. He works at Nickelodeon, but he makes really cool stuff on the side also. He used to do a show with me about apps. You guys remember that? App Slappy? Oh, yeah. I do. It's Eric Van Skyhawk, everybody. Hawkito, welcome back. How's it going, man?
It's going well. I'm super, super busy, but it's good to be busy.
Well, good. I'm glad you're busy, and I'm glad you had enough time, though, to take out and hang with us. That makes us happy.
It was a close one, but I made it.
All right. He really is, though, you guys. But like running around directing shoots. Like you're sitting around your lazy butts watching TV and you see a commercial come on and gangsta. You don't even know the work that went into what he did. Yep. Amazing.
Exactly.
All right. Well, let's jump straight in, folks, to the big top of the show. Something like that.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
Tom.
Amazon launched a $9.95 a month all-you-can-read subscription service today. It includes more than 600,000 ebooks and some thousands of audiobooks, which means less than 10,000 probably. Yeah. Lucky Boy 505 caught the leak of this earlier this week on the subreddit, currentgeek.reddit.com. K Bouton 1 is the one who nabbed the actual page that went live for real
today. So answer me this. Do those 600,000 books, which sounds like a lot, but I'm guessing in the larger scheme of human history, that's not really all that much. Does this include like new titles? Like when George R.R. Martin comes out with Flying with Monkeys in the Song of Ice and Fire series, is that one going to be on there? And can I just go straight into the new big releases like that?
Well, they have big names. They have the Hunger Games series. They have Harry Potter. They have Lord of the Rings. So it's not like they're bereft of big name titles. This is not a shallow selection of remaindered books or anything like that. So they have some deals with big publishers. Not every title from all the big publishers is in there. Tell you what bothers me about it is that if you are an independent publisher who publishes on their own, you're not with a publisher, you have to give Amazon an exclusive right to sell your book if you want to be included in this service.
Oh, I don't like that.
No.
What does this remind us of? There was something like this recently where people didn't want to, I don't remember. There was something very similar to this where people are like, yeah. Oh, no, I know. It was the Google Music the YouTube music service. Remember that whole thing we talked about on the show? It was like,
it was the YouTube. Yeah, it was the YouTube telling one of the indie labels that they would not sell the ads. They wouldn't give them partner benefits unless they agreed to change into the new realm that allowed the music service to access the videos.
Sure.
Slightly different there, because essentially what they were saying is you can have your channel and you can do your channel like everybody else does a channel and turn on monetization, knock yourselves out. We're not going to give you the special deal we gave you before. What Amazon is saying, and I got the email myself today, is
because you are a self-publisher.
You want to be in this service, this $10 a month service, which they will pay you for, they have a way of calculating the royalties, you have to be part of the Kindle Select program. And to be part of the Kindle Select program, you cannot have your book available anywhere else but Amazon.
Wow.
You have to rely entirely on Amazon for all your sales.
So, Eric.
Big question for you.
Yeah, go. Tom. Yeah.
Do you have your books available anywhere else besides Amazon?
I do. I have them available in the Apple iBook store, in the Google Play store, on the Barnes & Noble Nook store. On
Lulu. There you go.
I have them available on archive.org as free and undRM'd PDFs. In fact, when Scott and I started doing the Kindle singles, I thought, hey, this is great. We're only selling the singles on Kindle because Kindle is the only one who does singles. So we could actually try out this Kindle Direct program. And I signed us up for it. And they're like, your content from this book is available in another form, which is the Chronology of Tech History, which is available on other platforms. So you need to remove it from those other platforms. And the other platform was a paste bin that someone had posted up of the free version of the Chronology of Tech History. So I just told him, like, ah, forget it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that's, yeah, it's not beneficial because I can't imagine how much, if it's any like the music service, subscription services, like I get 7 cents.
Ye················
Exactly. Somebody listens to my song.
It's probably going to be like that too, I would guess.
Well, that was my question, Eric. So you've published music. It's on Amazon. You've got it up on iTunes and so on, various music download services and stuff. This has to, somebody making independent content like that, trying to sell it and push it around to different platforms and make it as available as possible. I feel like we're now entering a time where there's a bit of a chilling effect going on with everybody trying to sort of lock down their platforms as the one of choice or because of sheer numbers like the Amazon Kindle store and Kindles in general and ebooks with Amazon. They're forcing everybody's hand because that's where most of the play is. And it's limiting competition with other services and all the sort of thing. I feel like this is the opposite of what this whole digital distribution revolution was supposed to be. Like, I feel like we're going the whole other way. And music, you know, people have been complaining for years now that, you know, the old system prior to somebody figuring out how to monetize and get music out there without, you know, piracy killing everything was better for them as artists. So as somebody who's making that kind of music and you hear about deals like this going down with books and other stuff, how do you feel as an independent producer?
I don't see how this is like beneficial for Google because, I mean, if you're an independent publisher, like...
You mean Amazon.
What did I say?
You said Google. It's okay.
Oh, sorry. Google.
They're all interchangeable at this point.
Same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're going to merge into one mega or something.
But like, if you're an independent publisher, you're probably not as well known, and then nobody's gonna want to like, oh, I'm just gonna be exclusively when, as an I can imagine Tom being, you want to be have your stuff as to many for people to access as you know, all the platforms that you can have your stuff on, right?
Yeah,
exactly. And I think what this plays on is people who don't really think about it that way. They think about it the old fashioned way, which is I need to like keep my content as closely guarded as possible, not make it available anywhere that's not authorized. And they know that Amazon is the most popular platform. So to them, it's like, well, whatever. Let's give them an exclusive. What do I care? It's not like I'd make a lot of sales elsewhere anyway. And I'll get all this great promotion in exchange. Like not just the book service, the Kindle Direct program gives you like features on pages in Amazon and stuff like that. And it can really boost people's sales. I get why people are tempted to do it. But to me, a fundamental principle of the internet is that you cannot keep infinitely copyable content from being copied, which is why I take every one of my books and I put it for free up on archive.org because I know you can do it anyway. What I'm selling when I'm selling something is an easy way to access a verified copy that you can easily use in your system, whether it's Kindle or Nook or iBook. You're paying for that ease of use. You're not paying for the actual content. You're paying for the delivery mechanism.
Yeah,
you're paying for the benefit of getting it. What is the word I'm trying to think? Convenience.
The convenience.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, the convenience of getting your stuff. Like,
and I'm not saying I don't believe in intellectual property rights at all. I do. But I think you should, and that's why I issue these things with a Creative Commons license, which does limit what people can do with the property. But I realize that you can copy all this stuff anyway. So it feels like Amazon's like trying to play it old school. Like we're going to hoard the content onto Amazon.
Yeah, they're doing this stuff in general. How about, well, but if let's say you're Weird Al Yankovic and you've got a whole bunch of new songs to release, how do you think he's doing these days?
Well, he's selling them on
He's
it.
So interesting what he's doing with his videos. Have you noticed he's releasing a video a day?
Yeah.
Every but day for 8 days.
Yeah. Yes, but do you notice it's through a different
platform
like your firm was, it was Vimeo and then it was Yahoo and then it was like,
well, in fact, Eric, he released Tacky, which was a parody of Pharrell's Happy on the Nerdist.
Anyway,
Word Crimes, a parody of Blurred Lines by Robin Thicke on Vevo, his own Vevo channel. Foil by a parody of Lords Royal on College Humor. Handy, apparently Fancy by Iggy Azalea on Yahoo, and Sports Song came out today, which is a parody of a fight song from a college of unknown origin, which was on Funny or Die. So he's got three more to go. I'm interested, what other platforms is he going to use?
Yeah.
That's like so, I think that's so smart of him because he's just like, you know, I'll use them all, you know, and they're, and it's like, he's killing it.
Yeah. Seems to be doing fine. He also doesn't seem to be aging. I don't know what's going on over there.
He made a deal with Dick Clark's devil or something.
Something, man. Dick Clark's devil.
The thing about that that Tacky, that was a one take.
Was it?
It was. Yeah, I read an interview where he had to run down five flights of stairs while changing clothes.
No way. That's amazing, yeah, actually.
So
that guy does all right for 55 or something.
Yeah, the thing about those one take videos, sometimes they have to try them several times before they get the one take.
Correct.
Yeah, he was saying like he got it quite the workout that day because if it didn't work out, he had to
just start over.
Start over.
I can't believe that Weird Al is still just tearing it up all these years later. When I was a kid, I'm in junior high, I'm listening to that stuff, and my parents and every other parent within earshot were like, "What is that garbage? What a waste of your time, Dr. Demento? What, you know?" Like,
yeah, I remember him and his accordion. Another one rides the bus.
Right. And it was all accordion back then. Those for a while there.
Eat It.
Yeah. Freaking Beat It. Actually, Beat It, I think, was like the first entry, or Eat It was the first entry into him getting more like full band, full orchestra, full whatever. And then it was just no stopping him. And then I feel like there was this period of time where we all went, we don't need that anymore. And then he came back with this like a vengeance and just now owns the parody space. It's just crazy.
And these are like current. I mean, Word Crimes is probably the oldest one.
I know
the hits here. Like these are pretty current hits.
All right, let's predict who. So there's three more songs.
Yeah, and you can see what there's 12 songs on the album. Yeah.
You can see
by the way,
ones.
I want to thank Longswolf for pointing this out on the subreddit. Of the remaining songs on the album,
one of them's his. He always does like that long accordion like. Melody era, what's it called?
Now that's what I call polka.
Yeah. It's got to be it.
That might be his last one, his eighth one.
And he does that all, you know, he does that with every album. There's always one long accordion based, not melody. What's the word I'm trying to say? Medley.
Medley.
Yeah, medley's the word I meant. So I don't know if that one's going to make it or not. But if I had to predict, so I'm going to predict one of the quote unquote platforms or sites that hasn't released it yet that will. I'm calling it. I'm going to say BuzzFeed is one. And I'm going to say Reddit.
Do they have a video platform of their own?
No, I don't know if they do or not.
I think Vimeo.
They do.
Is probably going to be one.
Could be Vimeo. Yeah. I think Reddit could do something.
Reddit doesn't have its own video platform.
No, that's true.
BuzzFeed does.
BuzzFeed has their own. Okay.
Has YouTube released them?
Well, YouTube doesn't have a YouTube. They did it the Nerdist channel. It was the YouTube channel for Nerdist.
Oh,
and
gotcha.
He released it on his Vevo channel on YouTube.
And Vevo's also, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be
Daily
surprised.
Daily Motion?
It could be Daily Motion, sure.
Some channel on Daily
Not going to be Break TV. That's all boobs now.
What's that?
Frog Pants.
It's going to be Frog Pants.
Twitch. Twitch. If he does a game-related one, it could be.
But he has to be playing a video game in it.
I don't know if there is. Inactive is my guess for one of the next two.
Okay.
It's the Radioactive song, but really inactive, really inactive.
It's going to be sitting on a couch a lot.
Yeah.
Guess. All right. Well, there's that. That's exciting. Way to go. Way to go. Weird Al. Continue to be weird because you're awesome.
Our hearts again.
We love you.
Meanwhile, a recent panel of NASA scientists remarked that telescopes might find evidence of life out there in the next 20 years.
Mm.
Recent projects like the Kepler telescope, the Dark Energy Survey, and the Very Large Telescope have made some good progress detecting planets and atmospheres. Future projects like the Transiting Exoplanet Surveying Satellite and the James Webb Space Telescope are set to launch in 2017 and 2018 and might be able to tell more about the makeup of the atmosphere, whether there's carbon dioxide or oxygen or how much water there is. And Administrator Charles Bolden thinks they might be able to tell if there's life.
I have this I've had this long-held prediction that when we do find life, that they will be like Stargate civilizations, way, even Star Trek did this, but way underdeveloped. We're going to find out that we were ahead of the game for some reason. And they're
that's why we haven't heard from any other civilizations, because we're first.
That's part of my theory. Not that we're first.
There is the theory that I heard on Cosmos where we're so behind that we're being messaged by other people, but we don't have the technology to understand what they're saying.
Oh, wow. I thought you meant they were just dinking with us. Like they'd send us a message like, you don't like Iraq very much. And then we kind of, yeah, we don't like them very much. And, you know, we're being
manipulated. We don't realize we're getting a message from outer space.
Yeah.
You should have conflicts more often.
Like subliminal something. Where they're
wouldn't that be nice if all of our wars were to blame for extraterrestrials?
Well, it'd sure take the load off, wouldn't it? Eventually we'd be like, oh.
It wasn't our fault.
It wasn't us at all, after all. Yeah, this is interesting. I mean, 20 years, I feel like they've been telling me since I was 10 that aliens were going to be discovered at any time, and it's only a matter of time, and we're reaching
further.
Well,
I think what they're saying is they'll be able to tell, like, there is a signature that could only be created by bacteria in, you know, but they're not going to find a guy waving at us. You know.
They're just going to find,
some
molecules and bacteria and stuff like
that. Look at that, Beth.
I mean, humans. If the universe is effectively infinite, it just seems like eventually we're going to find somebody who's like us.
I think it's because we're living in a simulation. And the simulation just didn't code any aliens.
Okay. Also, maybe in the reality we're in, our particular sub-galaxy. What's wrong with me? When you live in a, not alternate reality, parallel universe. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Maybe in our parallel universe, we are identical to the one above us and below us. The only difference between us and them is that in our universe, there are no other aliens.
Yeah.
Think about that.
Could be.
Yeah.
Or maybe our universe couldn't parallel park properly and therefore got towed.
There's a comic there in somewhere there.
Yeah,
right?
Someplace. Snorb. All right, we'll get on it.
Dutch firm DFW Europe has revealed that its latest crematorium in Denmark can be run by an operator carrying around an HTC One. Just scan a barcode. That's to make sure you've got the right person being cremated. Push a button on the smartphone and voila, or whatever the Dutch word for voila is, cremation.
Well, there's an app for that. Hold on now. What's the point of this, though? Like, just because
they put the QR code on the wrong, corpse.
Got to be careful. Sure.
Okay.
Put the QR same code mix on up could happen.
That'd be like putting the wrong name on it, though. It's no different.
That's exactly what I'm saying. So why have that technology?
Well, you scan it so you can store the names. And then when you're ready, like Bob is ready to go. Yeah. Bob.
Yeah.
Send him in. And the heat generated is used to heat nearby homes and schools.
Okay,
That's kind of creepy.
That's fine with me. That is, I'm okay with that.
You are warmed by your loved ones.
No, that's like astronauts drinking their own reconstituted pee. That's fine with me because we're good at it. But what bothers me most is just that how much more convenient is this than pushing a switch? Shove Bill in there and push the switch. Why do you have to have the app?
Push the switch. It's like the light bulbs, right? Instead of walking over, I got to walk over there and push the switch. Or I have to push that particular switch. You just sit back and be like, time for a joke.
So lazy home automation ideas have gotten into the crematorium business. All right.
I'm for Hans.
I like the idea of heating homes. I'm all about reclaiming energy from weird sources. I think that's fine.
No, apparently, in all honesty, according to this Engadget article, it does create efficiencies and power saving and stuff like that.
All right. Well, we're in then. Dutch, way to go, the Dutch.
That's my ancestors.
Tell me about... There's the word Borderlands 2 is in here, so I can't wait to hear what this is about.
This one is from a submitter on our subreddit. And by the way,
it's from Nicole.
We've been getting more and more submissions on our subreddit, currentgeek.reddit.com, and it's incredibly helpful in picking cool stuff for the show.
Yep.
I can only read this submitter's name this way. Surprise Truck pointed us to an interesting article detailing and demonstrating the problems colorblind players have with some video games. It's not just that the art might not look as good because you're not seeing all the colors, but certain interface elements are problematic. The baseball that turns red so that you know what kind of pitch is coming is one feature of a game that someone who can't see red doesn't get anything out of. And in Borderlands 2, weapon rarity ranking was delineated by blue, purple, and magenta, which all look the same to the colorblind author of this Kotaku story.
Talk to a guy at Blizzard, whose name I can't use because I'm not supposed to, but he works with the, let's say he works in and around the Diablo team, and they said the reason that they went with the color choices they did for their epic colors is because they're the most distinguishable across most of the spectrums that most colorblind players have an easier time distinguishing between, if that makes sense. And a lot of games try to do that, and some games have built-in modes where you can switch it, and things get real weird for me where I don't have colorblindness, but for them, it makes a much more, you know, cohesive gaming experience. But even they're like famous game journalists, like Jeff Gerstmann over at Giant Bomb used to be at GameSpot, totally colorblind, yet one of the most avid gamers in the history of ever, and yet he's still somehow able to make it work. So being able to see what they have to deal with is pretty enlightening, you know, because I have no idea what this must be like until you, you know, see something like this.
Well, that's what's cool about this Kotaku article is they have graphics that to colorblind people won't look like they're doing anything, but they change between the actual version and the version that only shows the colors the colorblind people can see.
Yeah, you can
tell like, wow, stuff just disappears. It's hard to see, goes away. It's really interesting.
Yeah. Eric, you're not colorblind, are you?
I'm not.
I thought you were. Totally. Who do I know that is? Somebody we know that.
I was just born with cataracts. That was my big thing.
Oh, that's right. Oh, you and I share the whole cataract thing. That's what it is.
Are you Scott Johnson? I make your eyes.
I've just had them for 44 years, and you just got
you were born with them, right?
Yes, I was.
And then you got that weird left eye now that's like weird, right? Like it sees things but doesn't.
Yes, you know what that was like, right?
Yeah, they call it visual
dystopia.
No, it's visual. Ah, crap. I don't remember now, but it was this great name for basically
visual, crap. I don't know right now. It's a weird name for
it's back to the Dutch. But no, it basically is this thing where you're seeing out of the eye and it's clear and there's no hindering by, you know, vision problems or anything
there's
like
no
that.
Obstruction
no obstruction, but your brain is not translating everything the way it's supposed to. So you can't even describe how wrong it looks.
Yeah, because your brain hasn't made a connection with the eye and it's not properly decoding the messages or whatever. And you can't describe it. You can't draw what it looks like.
Yeah, you can't say, oh, it's
I can't like, hey, I'll show you a Photoshop file what it looks like. No, it's unexplainable.
I have a bit of that in my left eye. Eric has a ton of that in his left eye.
Yeah, I do.
So in a way, I guess I do kind of, like if I close and just try to use my left eye, I have perfect clarity. But I can tell you right now that my brain is doing backflips trying to just make sense of what I'm doing when it's only got my left eye to work. And it's an odd thing.
And that's different from the surgery that you had.
No, the surgery I had actually made it more intense because
they cleared up the
obstruction. Yeah. Because that's what it is. It's usually like if you have a lazy eye or a busted up eye, and when you're born, your brain just makes what little pathways it needs to it. Mm-hmm. And then when you correct that through some surgery or something, then the brain's like, "Whoa, wait a minute! We didn't have this before. We don't have all the hookups.
What do we do with it?"
Yeah, and like, in the case of my right eye, where it was my good eye, and then we changed its vision, so I have a different vision in that eye than I did before the surgery. My brain still does somersaults over that because it's wired to think it's at a different distance. So every once in a while, my brain will just go, "Does not compute," and almost like black it out. It's really odd. It's normal. I mean, and you get used to it as time goes on. It gets better. Although in Eric's case, I think when it's that young, maybe not as well. But.
Well, the thing what happens is when you're, you know, the developing, they didn't discover I had cataracts until I was 3 years old.
Yeah.
So it was like 3 years. My brain was just like, all right. After that, my brain is like, oh, I give up on it.
There's because at three, that's when all your major wiring happens anyway. Like,
yeah, exactly. The first 6 months is really important.
That's why they try to help the lazy eyes on your little kids. But anyway, not to make this eye hour with Eric and Scott, but it's an interesting thing because like colorblindness in a way, I mean, you can kind of reproduce that the way they have here on Kotaku and show you kind of what people are dealing with. But in the case of this ocular whatever the hell it is, you can't. There's no way to draw it, write it, create it. It doesn't exist in the human realm. It's really weird. Anyway. That's all I'll say about that. Thank you for joining us for that. And thank you. Surprise Truck. Great name.
Thank you.
This episode is brought to you by Dr. Ocular.
Dr. Ocular and Squarespace.com, where you can use the code CURRENT for 10% off your account. I don't know if you've spent a lot of time on Squarespace, but I like it because you can go there and you can get this trial going. And you say, man, I hope my site looks okay on a tablet or a phone. And turns out it does because this responsive design stuff's built right into these templates now, which is super easy and convenient. It's also nice to be able to have the tools you need to create an online store, a blog, like a portfolio for a photographer or something like that. Be a great place for Eric to put his music, for anybody to put anything. Try the trial.
I don't know, Scott. Yeah. I mean, sure. Do I use Squarespace for TomMerrittBooks.com? Yes.
Yes.
I do. But do I use Squarespace.com for cordkillers.com? Sure.
Yeah.
Do I use Squarespace for swordandlaser.com? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're all running out of
sense. But I'm just saying.
I know. And that should tell you something. Tom Merritt, the great Tom Merritt, uses a whole lot of Squarespace, and so should you. Get the free trial. Won't cost you a dime to try it out. Don't even ask for a credit card. Just do it. And if you like it and you sign up for good, use the code CURRENT at checkout. That's going to save you 10% at Squarespace.com. Go use them now. Because they're awesome.
In case you missed a look at one of the best-dressed beauties of the early 20s, here's another look at her. Had enough?
Well, that was the appropriate use of that bumper for the first time ever, wasn't it? Holy crap. Thor is now a girl.
What?
Now, don't get...
Scott, Thor is just a term applied to the person who wields the hammer.
Yeah, you're right. That's a point to make.
I don't know if that actually doesn't contradict what you just said.
It's important to remind everybody that we now have decades under our belt of stunt comic bookery, I like to call it, where Marvel, DC, and others have done weird stuff. I would remind everybody that Thor was a frog at one point. So if you think it's weird that Thor is a girl, Thor was a freaking frog.
And was, what's the horse-faced guy that they're talking about in this time story? Beta Ray Bill.
Oh, right. Beta Ray Bill.
Beta Ray Bill picked up Mjolnir,
mm-hmm.
or however you say that.
Right.
And was Thor.
Right.
And the guy who's normally Thor, when he can't pick up the hammer, which is apparently what's going to happen in this new series, is no longer Thor because he can't wield Mjolnir.
Yes. Mjolnir cannot be wielded. Mjolnir.
Mjolnir.
I put it in chat as well as Skype. You guys can see this frog version of Thor. I just think it's important to always bring frog that up. The Frog of Thunder.
Is this the inspiration for Frog Thunder?
No, but well, you mentioned it. This idea that any of this stuff is permanent, it's stunt comicking. It's what they do. Superman never dies. He dies and they make a giant deal out of it and then they bring him back. Batman doesn't break his back forever. They do that for a bunch of stunt issues and then they bring him back. Spider-Man gets possessed. I don't want to give anything away, but Spider-Man gets possessed by somebody you would never suspect for a whole year of issues, and then they reset it. Steve Rogers, a.k.a. Captain America, how many times has he died and how many times has he come back? Like, people freaking out about this right now because they think it's some weird PC move by Marvel. I mean, they're right in that Marvel knows how to push everybody's buttons, but we all need to be a little historic about this and relax because this is comic books. It doesn't mean suddenly Chris, what's his name? Who plays Thor in the movies? Chris Hemsworth.
Hemsworth.
He's suddenly not going to just be replaced by, I don't know, some lady. And if he did, oh, well, again, it's comic stunt casting. It's what they do. So none of it. People are getting all worked up about it. They're either, yeah, Marvel being progressive, or they're, oh, Marvel, what way to kowtow to the liberal media. It's neither of those things. It's just them making stuff to sell comics.
I actually do think this is the least bad example of some kind of stunt. I mean, it obviously is a stunt because you don't have Odinson wielding Mjolnir.
Right.
And that's the same kind of stunt they had with Beta Ray Bill and the frog guy and whatever. This is actually more understandable, I think. And I'm interested to see what the storyline is, but it sounds like something happens where Thor can no longer wield the hammer. And this woman, and we don't know who she is yet, finds that she can. And remember, the Hulk can't. Like, you have to be worthy to wield the hammer. Not just everybody can pick it up. So they've come up with a real reason. They said, this is not She-Thor. This is not Thorina. Like, this person picks up Mjolnir and becomes Thor for a while. Now, they said they're being cagey because they don't want to tell their story. So they're like, for the foreseeable future, she will be Thor. But they also indicated in this Time magazine article that we will see the old Thor back again. So yeah,
it's like 6 to 12 issues.
The fact that she's a woman is almost immaterial here.
Right. No, it's just a part of a storyline. Again, I'm you know, the part of this is on Marvel making a bigger whoop than there is.
But Thor, like, did Thor go on sabbatical? Is that what's going on?
No,
they haven't spilled the beans on what the story is. But something's going
some
to
theories.
Happen.
Yeah.
Probably he gets a research grant. I'm thinking.
That's it. Of course, yeah. That's it.
And so he has to go on sabbatical, and
I
Natalie Portman walks in and is like, is this yours? And he's like, oh my gosh, you're wielding the hammer. You're Thor now.
I was going to say, what was I going to say? Now I already forgot. Oh, no. So on the heels of this, so Marvel's been doing this crazy thing all week where they did that on the Colbert Report. That's where they announced this thing. Very next day, I don't remember what show. No, The View. Sorry, The View is for Thor. Colbert Report was that Captain America was handing his shield down, forgot his name, but to the Falcon, the character who is the Falcon in that universe. If you saw Winter Soldier, you saw the Falcon in Flesh and Blood. And everybody's talking about how now we have our first African-American Captain America. But again, Steve Rogers is not going to stop being Captain America. What happened to him is, or what will happen, I haven't been following the issue, so I'm not sure where they're at in the whole thing, but the serum, the super soldier serum that's in him is somehow taken away from him, out of him, and he becomes a old man with no powers, like immediately ages to where he should have been, no longer youthful, as if he really was born in the 40s or 30s, I guess.
Wow. Old folks home for, he'll be in that crematorium.
Totally. Thing. So he's super old. So he, while he has to deal with that and figure out what they're going to do, that shield gets passed to the Falcon, which is totally fine. That's totally awesome. There've been other versions of this, other kinds of this sort of thing. So Marvel's taking advantage of the fact that we have a news cycle where everyone freaks out and there's a lot of internet buzz and all that. And that's fine. Whatever it takes to sell comics. This is a different track than they have to take with the movies. It always has been.
No, Scott. The stories should always be exactly the same, never change,
yep,
and never become interesting or take any chances at all.
Canon law. That's right. How about...
I don't like these alternate Earths.
How about when a company in this world is so strict about their crappy customer service policies that they end up having a fight with Veronica Belmont and Ryan Block? What happens then?
Scott, just move to the next question.
It was a long thing.
This blew up. Oh, man, this is all over the place.
It was.
I think it blew up a little more than those two maybe expected.
I think intended. So, too. Well, perfect storm kind of deal because they have some reach and they recorded it at the right time. There was some talk about, you know, you have to disclose. I don't know what the wiretapping laws are in California, but you have to disclose that you're recording a call. Like Comcast does when they, you know.
I have talked to Veronica about this, and they have lawyers. They're not silly people.
Right.
There is, as you all know, every time you call one of these places, they say this call will be recorded.
Recorded, yep.
And so they I'm not going to speak for them when I say this, and I'm certainly not speaking as a lawyer when I say this, but I would imagine that they're probably okay. And even if somebody did want to make an argument like, well, we said we might record it, but we didn't say we would, and you never told us you were recording it. Comcast is taking the opposite tactic in this. They are backpedaling fast, saying that is not an example of how our customer service should behave. That is not how we train people. We apologize. So Comcast is actually doing the right thing in post call being put on there. I guess for those who might not understand what we're talking about, there was a 8-minute recording of Ryan Block trying to cancel his Comcast service that made it onto the internet, and a very persistent customer service rep trying to get him to explain why he was canceling it. And Ryan's resisting giving him any reasons why, just saying, we don't want the service anymore. Just cancel it. Yeah. And this is a recording that happens 10 minutes after the call started with Veronica just trying to cancel the service. The one thing that Veronica told me that she did want people to know is she had given him a reason. When he asked, why are you canceling? She said, because we've moved to a new place, and in the new place, we already have new service set up, and we just need it canceled in the old place. We're not living there anymore. Yeah. That wasn't good enough for this guy.
Yeah, he really pushed it.
And from what I've heard, from what I've read, and there's been loads of things written about this, Comcast representatives are encouraged to push as far as possible to convince someone to stay with them. Yeah. And that's what this guy was doing.
I heard,
I was reading articles where it actually comes down, they actually lose money, right? They start off with the amount of money in retainment customers. If they can't retain them, they actually could lose up to $1,000 out of their paycheck.
Yeah, it's some weird point system or something. True. Well, there's some Reddit. There's some
Comcast guy who's like,
on Reddit.
Yeah. So, well, you know what I mean.
You know, but it's on the internet, Tom.
There was some dude on Reddit who showed some pay stubs and showed he doesn't work there anymore. So who knows what his state of mind is, but he took pictures of some stuff that sort of indicated that they have a point system or some kind of scale and they have to.
And I think certain things can be misunderstood or blown out of proportion or whatever. Sure. But I think what is true is that you have to meet a certain criteria to make your commission.
Yeah.
And if you don't keep that percentage up, then you don't make your commission.
Yeah. And that's not unlike other businesses. Yeah. There's just a strong argument that this is bad news in the digital
space.
Here's
my problem with it. And Jenny Josephson, producer of DTNS, and I had lots of intense conversations about what is fair to say about this poor guy who got recorded and probably didn't really think that the other side was recording.
Yeah.
And that's that Comcast is using your service call that you have to make. You're a captive, right?
Right.
To sell you something. Mm-hmm. And that's what annoys people. And they're not just using it to sell you something. They're being aggressive at it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they very would aggressive. Be like that if they had effective competition.
Yeah. No, I agree. It's weird because you might assume that they're being overboard because that would be a reaction if you did have a lot of competition because they got to do everything they can to retain you.
But they also wouldn't want to risk you going and complaining about it, right?
Right. There's a lot more PR to deal with.
Be like, mm-hmm. don't sign up with them. They'll never let you go. But if you don't really have much of a choice, then when you're canceling, they're like, well, we're fighting against nothing. They're not going elsewhere. Although in this case, they were. Yeah. I think the attitude is usually if they're canceling, they're canceling for nothing. And we can always be better than nothing.
That's true. Things are always better when they're not nothing or something like that. Like that.
I think that's that was driving him nuts.
Oh my gosh.
I was just like, man, just like
that was painful for me to listen to. I could not actually quite.
Has
quite
there
make
any
it
been
the
comment
end.
From him, or has it just been radio silence?
He did an interview with Vice.com because Vice emailed him kind of before it blew up.
Yeah.
And then as soon as it got big, they didn't want to look bad. They didn't want to make it worse than it was. So they were just kind of keeping it cool. I don't know if he's made any other contacts besides Vice. He may have.
And to make it clear, Veronica and Ryan have openly said, we don't want this guy fired.
No.
We just think this is a systemic kind of cultural issue at Comcast that's bad for customers. And it's got
and
nothing
to
do
honest,
with, you know.
Not just Comcast.
No, it's a lot.
It's like, I mean, isn't Comcast rated as one of the worst customer service companies along with Time Warner and stuff like that?
Yeah.
Yep.
They always are, aren't they? What's weird, though, it's funny. I live in this strange bubble because in Utah, people love Comcast here. And I think it's because there's a lot of fresh fiber stuff and a lot of infrastructure work they've done here. And service is really good. I have amazing service. And I have any time I've ever had Comcast, they were always quick. They are out here installing when they said they would be. Prices are good. There's competition. Maybe that's why. So, Tom, your whole point is maybe a good point here because there is actual competition in the Valley that people could go to as alternatives to Comcast.
Makes a big difference.
And
yeah.
it really does. So here, we all love it. But I know the bigger picture, and I know it's not as simple as that. And in some markets, especially in big cities on the coast, it's not that easy. So anyway, it's an interesting thing. If you haven't been following it, just search for Comcast customer canceled something on Google and you'll be barraged with a lot of good information.
Yeah, you'll find it easy.
You'll run into it.
You won't be able to avoid it.
Here's what you shouldn't avoid too. You shouldn't avoid going to the frogpants.com/store link, because there you'll find the current Geek Pint Glass featuring Chewbacca riding like a schoolyard thing. I forget what those are called. Hobby horse. Sounds weird, but it looks really cool. I have one. Tom has one, and many of you have picked them up.
Drink them the water out of it.
That's right. They're still available at frogpants.com/store. Go check it out. You'll be happy you did.
America scores and wins.
Oh, Eric.
I'll score and win.
You're going to be the only. Well, I'm going to make Tom answer these other ones, but you're going to answer.
Going against Gavin McLeod?
Yeah.
Gavin McLeod, I'm sorry.
If you were going against Gavin McLeod, that'd be awesome.
Yeah. Dig that guy up. He's been cremated incorrectly on a bad UPC. Anyway, what am I doing here? Let's see. We are going to... I thought I had these pulled up. Crap. Okay, here they are. All right. We are going to ask Eric his questions, which are related to... Oh, interesting. What did he ask me to do? Oh, electronic music.
Yeah.
What is this?
You like
electronic
that?
Electronic music.
I know. You kids today. So... Eric, you know the rule. For those at home that don't know, if he gets an answer proper correct, he gets this. If he gets it wrong, he gets this. The whole time, Tom scores it in a weird way, and everyone wins. So, weirdly. Okay, here we go. Eric, here's your first question. What is the name of Dark Punk's first studio album? He may have meant Daft.
Dark Punk?
He wrote Dark. I think he meant Daft.
I think it's just Daft Punk, right?
What, the name of the album?
Yeah.
Homework. Maybe there really is a dark punk band. I don't know who that is.
Yeah, no, that's their first band. They had one that was just called Daft Punk, I thought.
Oh, they did.
I'm going to give you a point for dark punk. Yes. And I'm also going to assume Ice Worm wrote Daft.
Yeah, he wrote.
It just looks weird.
No, he wrote Dark, man. It is straight up dark.
I was trying to give him some credit.
I know. That's all right. He's a typo guy. Next question. What electronic music artist is responsible for the song Sandstorm? It's very popular.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Yes, we're very serious.
The thing is I do not listen to mainstream electronica music. Yeah. I just got to put it out there.
All right.
You're going to
lose a half point. Yeah.
I know, man. I'll lose it, but I'm just saying, I have no idea.
All right. Yeah, that would be incorrect. The actual idea would have been Darude.
Although he does get a half point back for saying he didn't have any idea, because he didn't.
What did New Order team up with in 2002 for a recording of Blue Monday? Meaning who, not what. who did New Order team up with in 2002 with a re-recording of Blue Monday?
I don't know.
I'll give you a hint. She's British and she's a she.
She's British and she's a she.
Yeah.
Annie Lennox.
You are incorrect. Kylie Minogue is the correct answer.
See, I'm telling you.
With all those hints. Come on.
I don't listen to her.
All right.
Locomotion.
What 90s electronic band covered the Bee Gees' Stayin' Alive? Now, I knew this one.
Staying Alive, 90s?
Yeah.
Dude, I'm flunking this thing.
It's all right. Everyone does.
Staying Alive. I have no idea.
All right. It's Entrance. Back when they had dumb names for bands in the 90s. In what year did Erasure release their debut album, Wonderland? This goes way back to when you and I were... I'll give you a hint.
Yeah, you know what kind of music I was listening to when that came out?
What?
I was listening to like Iron Maiden and Judas Priest.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, that's great. I did too, but I also went to an Erasure concert, like some kind of.
Did you?
I played this at dances.
Yeah. It depends. I was in the mood. I was pretty diverse. I liked a lot.
And it was
of
probably
stuff.
A real record, right, Tom? Yeah.
It was. spun it right round, baby.
Yeah.
Let me say 82.
You are incorrect. 86 is the correct answer.
Oh.
Yeah, the year you graduated 87, right?
88.
Yeah.
Ooh, class of 88.
Scott, you're 87.
87,
right?
Yeah. Should have been 88. I had one of those summer birthdays where I could have gone either way. Let's see. Next one. What is ATB's real name?
I don't listen to him.
Then you're going to say no, you don't know. Take a guess.
I don't know. Alexander Tanbell.
Oh my gosh. Andre Tannenberger. This is pretty close to what you were doing.
Right, he
there.
Loses a half point for excuse making, but we're getting him a quarter point for getting close.
I agree. That was weird. That was really weird. All right, next up, what producer has Madonna started working with for her new dance-oriented songs?
Like new?
I think this may be old. He's making it sound like it's current, but I think this may have been the NFL, like that time.
Oh, what's his name? It's the tip of my tongue. Oh, I can't remember.
It is William Orbit.
Yeah, that was
give you a quarter point for having to hear Scott.
That was like 5-6 years ago.
Dude, I should get a point for having to hear myself.
I think you should get a point for having to do that.
That was bad. All right, last question. Besides the intro track, what is the first song on Eric's Function album? That's your album.
The after the intro?
Yeah, after your little intro, what's the number one? What's the first track after that?
That would be the ELR theme, right?
You are correct. Nicely
done. Yeah, I almost
doxed you for not knowing your own damn album.
It's a good record. People should pick it up. Function on iTunes and Amazon MP3 right now. You'll get like 5 or 8 cents if you go buy it.
Like, I can name all these artists I listen to, and you guys would have no idea who I'm talking about.
I know.
Absolutely not.
Knife Party.
Knife Party. Noisia.
Yes. What's the... Dead Mouse.
Dead Mouse. I know Dead Mouse.
That's all I got. I can't think of anything else. You know, Dead Mouse called my Diablo show, Eric.
He did not.
I had some voice recognition technology.
No, shut up.
And that's totally Joel Zimmerman, aka Dead Mouse. I don't have it to play, or I would. Huh?
Did you get proof?
No, not yet. I need proof. I need him to say it.
He's not. He didn't do it. It wasn't him.
He's a huge Diablo fan. Anyway,
I know he's a huge Diablo, but it doesn't mean he's a huge Diablo show
but
fan.
But that's the voice of the guy. That's the guy.
It's not him.
All right, fine. But this argument goes somewhere else. We'll do this later. Tom, do you want to do the...
Yeah, let's do Tom now.
All right,
we'll
Tom,
let the gavel decide all right. the answers.
Tom is going to do Brecky's questions, which were... Oh, this is fun. Science fiction movies before the year...
He's going to hit this out of the park.
Well, here's the important part. These are all before the year 1999. Okay,
dude, he's like an encyclopedia. This is Tom Merritt we're talking about.
It's the gavel answering that.
Encyclopedia Tom. Okay. All right, here it is. First question. What company is responsible for making the computer chip used in Skynet?
Microsoft.
You are incorrect. It is Cyberdyne Systems from your Terminator movie. What is the name?
So wait, the points? Where's the point?
Lost a half point for that. You should know.
Only a half point. What is the name? Oh, no, he didn't get a point, and he docked himself a half point. So far, this is fair. This is how he does it. What is the name of the drug that is taking over Detroit in RoboCop 2?
The White.
It is Nuke.
No, you lose a point there, Gavel, for giving a Cardassian drug. Obviously not listening to the question.
Who provided the voice of Johnny Cab in Total Recall?
Nicolas Cage.
You are incorrect. It was Robert Picardo, the doctor from Voyager.
Yeah, and then you follow up a Star Trek answer by missing a Star Trek reference. That's another quarter point.
I love how fair you're being. This is the best. All right. In Aliens, what is the name of the ship the Marines are stationed on? I knew this one.
It's not the Botany Bay.
No, it's not. Oh, is that your answer?
That's the answer.
It is the USS Sulaco. Sulaco. I don't know how you say it. Sulaco.
Sulaco.
What is the name of the stew that Yoda gives to Luke Skywalker in The Empire Strikes Back?
Lamb.
Root leaf stew.
Yeah, the loss of a point for naming human food.
My
Come on.
Food this is. All right. In Demolition Man, what restaurant was said to have won the franchise wars?
Taco Bell.
Correct. Nicely done.
Gain a point.
Yeah, nice guy. You got a point. In Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, what beverages does Dr. McCoy give to Captain Kirk?
Romulan ale.
You are correct. Nicely done.
Good guest.
Eric is a good guest. I agree. Final question. In 2001, A Space Odyssey, what city in Illinois? Oh, I love this Illinois question. What city in Illinois does HAL 9000 say he became operational in?
Urbana-Champaign.
You are correct, sir. Nicely done. That was pretty good. Who won? How'd that go?
All right. With a score of -0.25, it's Gavel McLeod. and Hakito, Eric Van Skyhawk, with 1.75.
Yeah, see, that's fair. Way to go, Eric.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm impressed. You get a Jill.
Jill!
He gets a Barry.
Barry.
Nice job, everybody. Very nice. All right. Well, where does that bring us now?
Jill Barry.
I don't know. It was there, so I played it.
We have to do that from now on. That's awesome.
All right. Here's the forecast.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
And here's how we know Brecky was here earlier, because he put this in.
Yeah.
We still don't. Wait, I hope he's okay. We're all being jokey about him sleeping. I hope everything went.
Yeah, fine. I hope he's fine. Yeah.
The great Swedish uprising has happened. Who knows? Anyway, Brecky suggested this for our forecast segment that used to be a show. Now it's a segment. It's about us predicting the future in geeky ways. U.S. television will start playing the British model of short seasons with longer episodes of higher quality production. Think Sherlock, for example, where they do it in kind of chunks of three, or series will do six in a row and then nothing for 2 years while they work on the next series and that sort of thing. I'm kind of a fan of the way Britain does it. The UK does it in general. But I also, I didn't want Lost to be 12 total episodes. I sometimes you want a big, long, meaty show to go on for six or seven seasons. So I feel like there should be a mix. In fact, in a way, haven't we kind of met in the middle with cable shows that are highly thought of, like Mad Men, Breaking Bad, or whatever. They go for like 10 to 13 episodes, Game of Thrones and so on. Isn't that kind of a step in that direction without completely losing the American model of pound it into the ground until it's dead? Anyone?
I think what's happening here is not so much that we will change the model of how we determine how many episodes there are. But the reason the BBC does that, as far as I can tell, and if anyone knows different, please tell me, is because they are not beholden to a broadcast rating game the way broadcasters are in the US, because they're supported by the license fee, right? So they can say, this story needs to be told over this many episodes. Or Sherlock, because of the production value we want, should only be three episodes per season so we can really make them good. They can pay attention to the needs of the story they're telling over the needs of marketing and ratings. And the reason we always had 26 episode seasons was because that spread them out over the fall and spring seasons. And if you did enough of those seasons, it made a nice number for syndication. Those reasons are going away. Yeah. Syndication doesn't mean what it used to mean. You can syndicate to Netflix, you can syndicate to Hulu, and they don't care how many episodes are in the season. And we're already seeing this with things like House of Cards, with things like Orange is the New Black, with HBO shows, where they sometimes will do an 8-episode season out of the gate because they're just trying it out. Or with like Rome, where they were like, we're just doing two seasons of Rome. That's it.
Yeah.
Because that's the story we want to tell.
Yeah, that's true. They did kind of end that one on their own terms, didn't they? In terms of, I feel like that. But so then again, they got a show like Deadwood, which is one of my favorite TV shows of all time. And they just yanked the rug out, you know?
Well, and that shows how we haven't quite got there yet here.
Yeah.
To where we're like totally independent of that stuff.
Deadwood is kind of old. That's kind of like before this whole big TV is awesome thing kind of, you know.
Well, I mean, they were what, 04 to 06?
They were on the way up.
Six or seven. I mean, it was around.
I mean, but not like it is today where everybody thinks that the content coming from TV is like, it's fantastic.
The best and worst ever, right? Depending on what you're talking about. Like, you can talk about Breaking Bad. You can talk about Mad Men. You can talk about The Walking Dead. And people are like, oh, it's some of the best television ever made outside of HBO, even. And then you can talk about Honey Boo Boo and Duck Dynasty.
Yeah.
And people are like, television is the worst that it's ever been.
It really is polarized now, isn't it? But think about this. This is one of the things that hit me the other day about what's different about now versus, say, I don't know, let's say the 80s or even the early 90s. With television. Back then, it was a death knell, except maybe in MASH's case, to take a successful movie franchise, for example, or a movie, and make a TV show out of it. They always failed. That and we were talking about them on Twitter today. What were some of the examples people were throwing around about 1988? I guess I can't remember now.
9 to 5.
9 to 5 was a great example. Ferris Bueller series was terrible.
Oh my gosh.
There was a Ferris Bueller series?
Yeah. It lasted like 5 minutes, I swear. That thing was terrible.
Oh my gosh.
And this happened all the time. I want to say there was a Clueless series in the 90s. I mean, all these weird, let's bring movies home thing. But lately,
Like it's that, like they were doing what they're doing with video game movies.
Kind of, but like A&E's Psycho series, Bates Motel, is really good. Hannibal's really good.
Hannibal, yeah.
Fargo is amazing. Like, we're in a different time where you can... These old ideas that doesn't work is kind of... Maybe video games
they're
will get to that
smarter,
point.
They're smarter, though. Like, look at the difference, right? With MASH, even, which was incredibly successful, and 9 to 5 and Ferris Bueller, they tried to take the movie and turn it into a television show.
Yeah.
And everybody's like, wait a minute, that's not Matthew Broderick. Those aren't the actors. This isn't the same story. This is weird. Whereas what they're doing with Fargo, what they're doing with Psycho, is they're figuring out how to continue the story.
Yeah.
In a way that says the movie is still the movie.
Yeah.
But we're going to tell another part of the story that you never saw before.
Yeah. Or a different angle, different time, or different characters altogether. And like in the Fargo case, that's just the universe. You know, the Fargo universe with a whole nother story being told. And they'll do that for season two again. A bit like, what's the American Horror Story does this? This kind of...
they restart every season.
Sure.
Yeah.
Then they end up winning the, best miniseries award because it's easier to get in there when you're doing something weird like that. But
I think we should submit Kerenke because best miniseries.
Let's do it. I think, yeah. That episode with Eric was astounding in 2014. What? I don't know if you remember that one.
Yeah. Gavin McLeod.
Gavin McLeod.
Gavel.
Gavel McLeod. Come on now. But yeah, it's just an interesting... It's weird because there's a old guy part of me that grew up with the A-Team and shows that I thought were amazing that were just kind of bad and TV was bad. And now when you say, hey, we're turning Fargo... Like when they said, we're turning Fargo into a series, I went, oh, I don't know, man. Like that seems weird. But then, you know, this stuff works now. And the fact that NBC is still making episodes of Hannibal blows my mind because that is such a non-network thing to do to make that show. That is so cable. I don't know how they're getting away with it. It's amazing. That's a really good show.
And these days, I
equate TV with garbage now, like broadcast TV. I don't think of anything good on those. I know their stuff, but I don't think of them as good. What were you going to say, Eric? I cut you off there.
But I'm just saying, like, it's interesting the model we have today. Like look at Community. They got canceled again, right?
Yeah.
But now, like, Yahoo picked them up.
Right? Did Yahoo do it?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't hear that.
Yeah, when Ibbot made that joke during the Frog Pets All-Stars at Nerdtacular, I was in the audience going like, actually, Yahoo picked them up.
Because he said Yahoo, didn't he?
No, he said Hulu abandoned them. Hulu. Even though nobody is. Yeah, and I was like, you wrote the joke before Yahoo. Because the news like just come out at that point.
Oh, right. Because we had that whole section on Community stuff. Yeah,
by
I don't know.
Way,
what a weird time.
Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore. Award-winning film.
Yeah.
Turned into the sitcom Alice.
Oh, no way. Really? Oh.
Yep.
Oh, I didn't know they had anything to do with that.
Yep.
But then they made Flow and ruined it. Remember that? They had the Flow
spinoff.
They always
got to take it to the Joey level, don't they?
Oh, they do, dude. The worst offender was Dukes of Hazzard and the Enos spinoff.
Oh, whoa. I don't know. I think After MASH.
After MASH was pretty bad.
After MASH? Oh, my gosh.
Remember that? Yeah. That was garbage.
What about they had Barney Miller, then they did Fish, right?
Yeah, Fish. Although Fish
liked Fish.
Fish was all right. They occasionally you'll pull it off. Like Frasier is a great example.
Yeah.
Frasier was fantastic.
Yeah, it was a really good show.
One of the keys is doing it before the first show is canceled.
Yeah.
Because Joey with Cheer or with Friends and After MASH, they're all like, well, the main show's been canceled, but we're trying to save a part of it. Whereas Frasier started before Cheers had ended.
Yeah, he left Cheers.
Cheers was still going on, but he wasn't playing a big part in it anymore.
Well, and they tried to have another one. Remember the spinoff from Cheers that no one remembers, which was the Tortellis, which was Nick Tortelli. It was, ex-husband?
Rhea
Perlman's ex on the show. Yeah. And then they were going to do this separate thing. And I remember being excited about it and watching it and going, oh, this isn't very good. That was a weird thing that you don't see happen as much anymore. You don't see, Scrubs ends and then you don't see Zach Braff doing his character again, but living at home as a dad or something dumb like that.
Breaking Bad, on the other hand, is totally doing this. It'll be interesting to see.
It's funny because you find things to trust, even though it goes against the idea that you think you don't trust. But because the right people are involved, you're kind of giving these guys passes. I suppose that's a lot of pressure on them.
They're kind of doing the same thing as a Fargo, where they're saying, we're going to live in the universe, but we're not going to try to, like, tell the Breaking Bad story.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm excited for that. We don't have an air date for that. Is it 2016, 2015?
It got delayed. They've renewed it for a second season, though, and it hasn't even been put on the air
Successful. Yet. Yeah, someone went in the future, saw it worked out, came back.
Yeah.
There you go. Good prediction there, Brecky. Well, we have done it in your honor, sir.
Well done, man.
Got a quick email from another Jay Martin who sent these in. And by the way, you can send your emails to us real simply and easily to currentgeek@gmail.com. We are happy to have them. You can send attached to audio too. We don't get that a lot, but if you have something to say and you want to hear it on the show, we'll be happy to do that as well. He wrote
if
and
you're
said,
not, if you're not Dead Mouse, you can call in too.
And yeah, totally. Or if you are and just say your real name, Joel Zimmerman, AKA Dead Mouse. He totally called the show. Anyway. Hello, Scott, Tom, and assorted guests. We'll say assorted guest. You're a very sorted
guest. Sorted guest.
I know we'd all like to be able to use a matter transporter to get everywhere instantly, but I don't think that technology will be able to be used safely for living beings, meaning us. I think our video calling technology will improve to the point that we will call into empty robotic bodies. Your face will appear on the head, and you'll be able to connect with the environment or interact with the environment. Who would need teleports when you can just sit in the comfort of your home and still be physically present somewhere else? Thanks for the great content. Another Jay Martin. I like that idea a lot.
So there's this like Oculus Rift, like, you know, kinda, to work.
Sure. There's the beginnings of that.
But robot body.
Dude, we that, already Bruce? Have this. There's
we do?
That, there's those telepresence robots already that you can do exactly that.
Yeah, but imagine ones where it was more like that Bruce Willis movie, and I don't remember the name of it. In fact, that was part of All-Stars. One of the posters. Anyway, it's where you can teleport your entire presence into a surrogate body. Well, surrogate. That was it. Surrogates.
Yeah.
That's the movie.
But then you're in a surrogate body. I think what he's saying is a robotic body. I think another Jay Martin's thinking too small here. Like, that might be an interim step, but who wouldn't want to be able to just teleport and actually be in the other place? I think that makes all the world a difference. Mm-hmm. And when you say they'll never figure it out, I don't know. They used to think it was crazy that we could go to the moon, and we did that.
Yeah. I've had a change of heart. I used to have like my favorite superpower, and I think it was flight or something. But I think I'd rather be able to teleport instantly. I think that is the ultimate power.
I could do the show at Scott's house.
Yeah. Like for an hour and then go home.
And then just head home.
And yeah. No. Then we'd all three of us finish this episode together in a room with three mics, and then we'd all go to France and have dinner with Patrick, and then be home before night, before the freaking sun sets.
Boom.
Like that is the kind of world where that would be so fundamentally change the way we live and are and breathe and
so much
work, and you know what money means and what anything means changes if that technology existed. But I'm all for it. It's going to be a rough transition, but I'm ready. That's amazing. All the walls are down. Oh my gosh. Dude, we could go, we could all go to the same movie theater, and we could all come from, you know, 500 people from all around the world, just blip, 2-hour movie. Thanks, everybody. See you next time, and beam back to their homes. Oh,
hell, we could be in the movie.
I'm ready. Yeah, right?
Let's be teleported into the movie as a sort of a safe bystander.
It's either the great.
Did you guys talk about this with Oculus Rift?
Well, a little bit.
But we don't even need Oculus Rift.
Yeah, forget Rifts. We're just going to teleport, dude.
That's old fashioned.
Yeah. Yeah, Grandpa, come on with your Rift. There's your email. Thank you again. And please send more people. That's going to do it for the show. Eric, always a pleasure, man.
Thanks for having me.
Eric, known as the pleasure man.
Hello? What?
I don't know what I'm saying. Do you have anything cool going on? Any projects? Anything rad you want people to know about?
I do got to release the Diablo song now that I have your artwork.
Yeah, now you're not waiting for me anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm going to try to make it a little longer because it's only like a minute long.
It's super short. So. If you've heard the Diablo show, which has its final episode tomorrow for season one, that'll be episode 12. Look at me doing 12 episodes just like TV is now. Anyway, that will be, it'll feature that song again. So when you hear it there, you'll know what we're talking about. And then when Eric puts it up, you can go buy it for a measly 99 cents. We'll tell you where. Where are you on Twitter and stuff? How do people follow you?
I am at Twitter at Hawkito, HAWKITO. Mm. That's where you can find me on Twitter.
All right. Do that. Tom, we got any announcements, anything cool in your world you want to say?
Those Kindle singles are available for free.
That's right.
You know where to look. Otherwise, go to tombarrettbooks.com and pay 99 cents.
We appreciate the support when you do that. Yeah. And August is coming soon. I got to get that artwork to you. But yes, that's coming soon. Watch for that. Oh, what else? I think that's going to do it for us. Andrew Allen did our theme music. He's awesome. Keys with Soul on Twitter. You should follow him. We're at Current Geek on Twitter. I'm at Scott Johnson. Tom is at Ace Detect. CurrentGeek.reddit.com is our Reddit. CurrentGeek@gmail.com. CurrentGeek.com for everything else. It's going to do it for us, for me, for Tom, and our guest, Eric. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye now.
Later.
Welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we continue our review of recent Supreme Court decisions affecting the tech world by analyzing the decision in Alice Corp versus CLS Bank. Like many Supreme Court cases, a primary issue is whether the resulting ruling will affect more than just the narrow facts at hand in the case. For the Alice case, the simple question was whether a patent claiming a computerized trading platform for eliminating settlement risk in financial transactions was patentable subject matter. The broader question was whether software patents at large are actually patentable subject matter. As is typical in such cases, the Supreme Court answered the facts at hand and did not address the broader issue. Thus, the reports that software patents were greatly curtailed by this decision are simply false. The elimination of settlement risk was deemed by a unanimous court to be what is called merely an abstract idea. Moreover, the claims that add the generic computer system elements to perform these methods were ruled to not be patentable subject matter either. Put simply, a patent attorney cannot merely wordsmith claims and add simple computer elements to make a non-patentable abstract idea into a valid patent claim. From a common sense perspective, the Supreme Court has acted logically in stopping gamesmanship. However, the court made it abundantly clear by comparisons to previous precedents that this analysis of abstract ideas has not changed. The bottom line is, software patents in the broad sense are still as patentable as they have ever been. If software is to be deemed non-patentable subject matter, that decision will clearly not come from the Supreme Court. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and legal-themed questions as segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy. If you want to hear more about this or other similar cases, please check out my upcoming seminars at Gen Con in August.
Welcome to another iteration of The Geekly Scholar. I'm Rich Straffolino, and each week I'll be highlighting an article with a geeky focus written with scholastic rigor. This week, I found a fascinating essay via the MIT Technology Review, which asks in its title, "Do we need Asimov's laws?" This article takes a unique approach to the question. Upon seeing the title, I assumed they would be reviewing the computational linguistics required to enforce the intent of Asimov's three laws. Instead, the authors Ulrich Barthelmess and Ulrich Furbach examine the historical and cultural circumstances that situate these laws as seemingly necessary. In the first part of the essay, the reader is treated to a historical review of robots, both in theory and reality, going much further back than the 1924 origin of the word. In all of these historical examples, we see ideas of what would become to be thought of as robots, depicted positively. This changes in the author's eyes due to two main factors, religion and the Industrial Revolution. The authors then proceed to try to explain why this does not hold up across cultures. This is perhaps the most controversial part of the article, and hints at perhaps a little ethnocentrism. Looking at Asia and Japan in particular, the essay observes that robots are seen as helpful and even virtuous, noting the popularity of Astro Boy to the extent that he was named a Japanese envoy for safe overseas travel. The authors also cite the work of MIT historian Bruce Maslisch, stating that in Western cultures, the emergence of robots fits into a history of great discontinuities of thought, each previous one resulting in the same type of suspicion and paranoia that we perhaps display toward robots. According to Barthelmess and Furbach's interpretation, Eastern cultures did not experience this seismic shift in thought in exactly the same way, and thus do not feel as threatened in a cultural sense. This to me seems fairly reductive, but certainly cultural differences dictate different perspectives on the issue. I'll leave you with a quote from the authors provided by Makoto Nishimura. "If humans are the children of nature, then artificial humans are the grandchildren of nature." This has been The Geekly Scholar. Find links to all the articles cited on Twitter at Mr. Anthropology.
Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.